You're listening to UCF Knights Talk, a UCF Knights podcast with the Orlando Sentinel's Shannon Green. Get the latest on the hottest topics involving the Knights from our unique perspective. And now, on with the show.
And welcome to another edition of UCF Knights Talk. I'm Brant Parsons with Shannon Green, talking UCF, a slow week. For UCF out there, not a whole lot going on. Shannon, what has the what have the past 72 hours been like for UCF and UCF football?
It's been a whirlwind. It's been like a marathon that turned into a sprint, if you can put it that way. Because you have to remember, let's dial it back all the way to a couple weeks ago when they had that epic game against USF. That was Thanksgiving week. They were already coming off of a shortened week, coming back from Temple on the road. They had this big rivalry game. Next week is the AAC championship. Then you got all the distraction about what's happening with Scott Frost. Then Scott Frost news breaks during the game that he's going to Nebraska. And a game, by the way, which was a double overtime game that had a ton of action happening in it. Then right after the game, you know, not even 2 hours later, there's a private team meeting where Frost tearfully has to tell his players that he's accepted the job. Then media gets an alert that there's a press conference going on downstairs that Danny White's going to be talking about for the next head coach search. And we were still writing our game story. So you get down there. Then Sunday, you're back there to interview players for the Peach Bowl announcement. And then Monday, you know, we're tracking the news of the hiring. Kevin Sumlin, is he in, is he out? And then Tuesday, bam, you're at another press conference introducing the next head coach. So been pretty slow.
Well, you know, yeah, just another week. Of course, the hiring of Josh Heupel, I gotta give Danny White credit. You don't know what they're doing, and every expert out there has different names that are always floating around. And then, bam, they come up with this hire. Of course, he played at Oklahoma, national championship team as a quarterback. They bring him over from Missouri, where he was the offensive coordinator. With this hiring, what have we learned about where UCF feels it is and what direction it's going? What was your impression of UCF's mindset and plan of attack when they went out and made this hire?
I think they definitely don't want to reinvent the wheel, obviously. They have a system that works. They want to keep the high tempo, fast-paced, no-huddle offense. And some of this is being directed by players, too, because the team representatives that were elected for the football team that spoke with Danny White said they wanted to continue an RPO-type offense, run-pass option. So definitely Heupel is going to continue that speedy offense. He's known for turnarounds, too, because Missouri was number 124 in total offense before Heupel got there, turned them into a number 7 offense. So he has the potential to create an explosive offense as well, very similar to Scott Frost in terms of his background, the son of a football coach, a national championship winning quarterback at Oklahoma. So there are a lot of similarities there. I think the biggest thing I should say the most interesting thing to me about this hire and what it told me about where UCF is at is what was in the contract.
Yes.
Danny
a much different contract.
Oh, it was different people. It was different. Danny White said, what you're not going to do this time around is leave after 2 years. So the buyout, you know, for 2020, if any other school comes hunting Heupel down, is $10 million. So you can guarantee yourself that, you know, he's not going anywhere for a little bit. So I think that was a very interesting sell. But also Randy Shannon, the defensive coordinator, I thought it was interesting that he said he was going to run a base 3-4. And for football heads that sort of really follow this, as you know, Randy Shannon generally runs a 4-3, something that was very similar to what O'Leary ran. So I thought that was interesting that they wanted to keep similar systems to work around the personnel that they currently have.
thought that was an interesting hire. Not an interesting hire, like, but how he came in. He's named head coach, and he already has his defensive coordinator. I think a smart hire for him as far as recruiting. We know what Randy Shannon can do recruiting-wise in the state. He knows the state. He certainly has spent time here being a player, being a head coach, being a defensive coordinator, all those things. I thought that showed that Heupel's coming in prepared, and he's done his research and he's done his homework, and he had already picked out a guy that he was bringing in to help on those things. I thought that was kind of a big move to have that announcement come at the same time, because if there were any concerns that he did not know the Florida landscape maybe well enough, having Randy Shannon and his recruiting there certainly cushions any reaction to that could have been out there.
I think that was smart on his part, Brent, as you said, because Heupel is not a known name like Randy Shannon. So I think it was important for them to come out when they introduced the next head coach, not just, hey, everybody, here's Josh Heupel, who a lot of you guys don't know, but trust us, he's good. But also, hey, here's Heupel, and here's also Randy Shannon. You know who Randy Shannon is. You know his pedigree. You know where he comes from. I think that was definitely, you know, at least from an optics standpoint, it was a nice 1-2 punch to come out with, especially for a fan base that's feeling a little bit deflated that you're losing, you know, an outstanding coach, and not just an outstanding coach in Scott Frost, but a very, very outstanding staff.
And also a nod to those recruits out there too. Exactly. Hey, you know this guy, and this guy's probably been recruiting you already to Florida. Now, you know, come join him here at UCF. With this hire, with this contract, with this situation, does this make UCF more of a destination job? I know that's an ultimate goal. You don't want to be the stepping stone to the next job. And it hadn't been for a while because, you know, George O'Leary, he was past stepping stone age. It was a reclamation project for him as much as anything. But then Scott Frost comes in, and we know what happened there. The contract in this sets us up to be more of a destination job. I know Josh Heupel said the right things at the press conference. Is this a step toward that direction to make UCF more a job that be considered a destination job?
You know, I want to say that UCF in an alternate reality is a destination job. And were it not for them being a Group of Five school and the college football playoff structure being what it is, then I would say yes. But I think at this point, if you get 5 years out of a coach, we have to start measuring this in dog years. So 5 years might be a great run for you to have a coach. Because listen, since 2013, the first year that it was technically the American Athletic Conference, you know, they said Louisville and Rutgers and some other teams. Since 2013, there have been 18 coaching changes. 18. Yes. And six of those coaches have gone on to Power Five jobs, with now Scott Frost going to Nebraska and Chad Morris allegedly to Arkansas being the latest. So you're definitely seeing a trend within this league. There hasn't been 1 year in this league where they've had the same set of coaches. I think that's just kind of the reality for what this league is. And I have a story that I'm going to be working on tomorrow coming out where I talk a little bit more about that. I caught up with the commissioner, Mike Oresko. So I don't know. It's really hard to call UCF a destination job just because of the landscape of college football. But I think, listen, that's a great, UCF is a great job. It just really is, because you live in Orlando. You have a chance to be competitive for a championship every year. So that's a good resume pattern for you, because you live in Florida, which you have a ton of recruits that want to stay in Florida. So it's just a great setup. You have a great administration. Danny White is, I mean, he's a home run hitter. He's been hitting home runs on these hires. I don't know how Heupel is going to turn out, but I can tell you, based on Danny White's very short track record, he's been exactly getting it done. So I think it's a great situation. It's a great job, but is it destination? I don't know.
Hey, we learned in the past 2 weeks that Florida State and Oregon aren't destination jobs. So, I mean, it's I know everyone wants to get that term, but you have guys that have left premier schools. Florida State, obviously, we know the history they have, and of course there's other stuff there with Jimbo Fisher that maybe caused that ousting. But Willie Taggart, he's got Nike money out at Oregon, and certainly not a knock on Oregon. He wasn't running from Oregon, but there was another job he wanted. So it's there's very few jobs out there at this point that I would say are total destination jobs. Maybe a handful. I think it is a step toward at least getting a guy that you can keep around more than 2 years. All this stuff is going on, and of course, the most important thing around the program came out on Sunday, and that is that UCF did indeed accept the invitation to the Peach Bowl. They will play the Auburn Tigers, winner of 2 games against number 1 teams this year. They've played 3 of the 4 teams in the playoff. They've beaten 2 of them. They are from the SEC. They may not be complete blue blood like in Alabama, but they're like that step below. This is going to be a nationally televised game. It's going to be on New Year's Day, the day of the playoffs. It's going to be the lead in to the playoffs out there. So you're going to have eyes on it. So that is what UCF players are going to be focused on. That's what the program is going to be focused on. And of course, that brings up our whole next set of questions and storylines. And the one, of course, that's hitting now is, of course, Josh Heupel will not coach UCF in a bowl game. New coaches do not come in and coach a bowl game. The next season is on his mind. Right now, recruiting is on his mind. And so the question then sits around, and everybody has an opinion on this. Is Scott Frost the hero or a villain for wanting to coach UCF in a bowl game? Not even figuring out the logistics if it happens. He said he wants to. Nebraska said they're cool if he does. Everybody's saying the right words right now for it. So there is still that option that he may coach UCF in the Peach Bowl. But how does that fit in everything? And is that the right or wrong thing to do? I have an opinion on it, but I'll let you go first on just that story being out there.
I think it's necessary because you don't have any other option at this point. I mean, you don't want to bring in a new coach like Heupel that doesn't know these kids to take them to that game. And he doesn't even have a staff yet. So outside of Randy Shannon. So Scott Frost and his staff have to come back and coach this game. And right. They should. They're the guys that led them here. So I don't have a problem with them doing it. Ultimately, this is something that really only the players should have the final say-so on this. And I get the impression that the majority of the players absolutely want Frost there on the sidelines, leading them into the trenches. They love this guy, you know. Yeah, there's some hurt feelings. Let's be honest. There are some hurt feelings because you're talking about 18 to 22-year-old young men that haven't quite learned about the business side of college sports yet. They know the realities, but now they're understanding the business. The business side doesn't mean that Scott Frost doesn't love them and, you know, they didn't, what they did together didn't mean anything. It just means that a great opportunity came and he took it. I think that most of them want him there. What to me, what's interesting, Brent, is the potential outside distraction that it causes. I don't think inside of the locker room they're going to have a problem. It's just going to be business as usual for them. I think the issue to me becomes, you know, that whole week of a bowl game is a media event. You know, you have different things that are going on every single day, you know, lights, camera, action, national media. So it's not even so much like, you know, the local guys like us that cover the team all the time. It's that you're going to have the national spotlight on you every day. And you do have to wonder about the mentality of, okay, every single day am I going to have to hear a Scott Frost story? How many times are you going to be asked the question about how awkward is it to be in this situation? You know, after a while, it's just those are the things that I do wonder how they're going to contain that, because it's kind of like it's a sore spot. You know, it's a sore spot. There was a breakup that happened. You know, it was on amicable terms. They love him, but, you know, it's sore. So you don't want to have to keep hitting somebody in the gut for, you know, 4 or 5 days on the same topic leading up to a big game where they need to be totally focused. So that's the part that I do think could be a little awkward. And I wonder how they're going to navigate that. I wonder if, you know, Scott will actually be physically on the sidelines. I mean, he's going to have a hand in the game planning and all of that. We know that he's going to be coaching the game, but I wonder, does he stand on the sidelines? Is he in the box? I mean, or is it just something that by the time we get to January 1st, nobody cares about and it's just business as usual? I would hope that's the case, but I don't think in this day and age of social media, national media, we're going to be allowed to just focus on that, because, you know, even coming into the Memphis game, Scott was wearing a shirt. I think it was like red and it was a checkered red and white shirt.
Red, white, and blue. but the red and white stood out.
Yeah, and social media lost its mind. They were like, oh my God, he's wearing a red and white shirt, you know, and for the obvious implications. And I understand why people pointed it out, because obviously he's going to Nebraska. But still, I'm just saying that it just creates a lot of extraness that they don't need to deal with. And I wonder how they're going to navigate that.
I thought Coach Frost touched upon it in his introductory interview with Nebraska. He does not like the timing of when you have to decide and make the move for coaching, because the season is not done. And if you think about it, in other sports, they don't have that month break. In the NFL, if you leave a team, usually you're an assistant coach, but if you leave an assistant job to a new team, they wait until the season's over before they're allowed to talk to you. Wait till the playoffs are over. Same thing in the NBA, college basketball. You wait until the season is over. But the way college football is set up, especially with recruiting being as big as it is and having that long window, and obviously now also the early signing period that's coming up in 2 weeks, I think puts some of that pressure on it. So it's still this season, and the team is still this season. So I think his viewpoint, at least from what it sounds like, is this is still my team. I still want to lead them. And I think if the players can grasp onto that and appreciate that idea, and if he can stick to that idea that this is still this team and they want to finish it out, the outside noise will be annoying and it may have some effect, but there's been outside noise around this team for a while.
It's different now,
but I mean, it's still the same outside noise. And if you, as a team, and I agree with you, the players need to be the one to make the decision, not the fans, not us, not our columnists, not our sports radio guys. It's a decision, I think, that is solely that of the players and of the new coach and the old coach and the program. But if the players are okay with it, because to me, for UCF, what matters more than anything is beating Auburn. And this is a team that has been disrespected by the committee all season long, that has not been given its due, that to me, at least, I feel that affects them. It affects Group of Five teams. This team is better than they've been ranked in all of the playoff rankings, and this is their chance to prove that. So whatever gives them the best chance to prove that, to me, is the best thing for this team. And, you know, people say, oh, well, it's an advertisement for Nebraska. It's an advertisement for UCF, too, if they beat Auburn. You know, if you lose to Auburn, then everyone says, well, see, we told you. We told you guys weren't worthy of being in the top six, top eight, top four. I know how bowl games work. I know how these things it's so hard to tell which teams are going to show up, because it is that month off. And with coaching changes and everything else that changes around it, so it's not an exact science of showing which teams are better. But UCF has a chance to really change the narrative in this game, change the narrative about itself, change the narrative about Group of Five teams, improve chances for good teams in Group of Five moving forward by winning this game. So to me, whatever way makes that most possible is the right way. And I don't care about hurt feelings in fans. I don't care about hurt feelings in anywhere else. I just, whatever the players can decide that's going to make them the best they can be in that game, I think that needs to be the focus on this.
Well said, Brent.
I've been thinking about this. It's been on my mind. Everybody has an opinion, and most of them are coming from their own, you know, the fans are coming from their own emotional state on this, and they're hurt, and I understand that. But just to me, you have to think more about what this what this all means for this program. And along those lines, I know you agree with me, but how big is this game on January 1st? I mean, this thing can change so much. I've kind of touched upon it, but just from your vantage point, how big is this Peach Bowl for UCF?
This Peach Bowl is the potential. It has the potential to give the CFP the ultimate FU, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, sure. If you're listening now, you're in. You're part of the group, so you're fine with us.
Right. I mean, it is. It's basically, you know, an opportunity to basically rewrite the story. and say that undefeated is undefeated. I put on my pads just like you put on your pads. You know, football is football. Enough of this, you know, perception about we're not as good as you are. You know, it has the opportunity to change the optics of college football. I say the opportunity because the opportunity and the reality may not match up. You know, UCF mm-hmm. beat Baylor in 2013, and yet I just feel like every time I hear people discussing UCF football in the context of Scott Frost, they act like football didn't even start at UCF until 2016. And I'm like, there was a whole history here, y'all, that UCF had. It's not as though this is the first time they won a football game or even a major game. I would say this is the biggest game in school history for sure, for the moment that we're in. But, you know, UCF football has produced some ballers. I mean, this is the same program that's had Dante Culpepper, Brandon Marshall. The list goes on and on of big-time players. A.J. Bouye now playing for the Jags, who signed the biggest, you know, free agency contract to date, and this was a guy that wasn't even drafted. So I just, at this point, I'm like, I don't know what else it's going to take for people to take this program seriously from a national perspective. I don't know what it's going to take to make people call UCF UCF instead of Central Florida. I don't know what it's going to take for people to do research and know the history. Because I don't know, Brant. I just feel like at some point people just kind of decide in their minds who's in, who's out, what's popular, what's not, who's hot, who's not. I mean, it's just like it's Alabama, Ohio State, you know, Texas, Oklahoma. Like just certain schools just get the perennial benefit of the doubt. And you know, other schools that are, you know, playing good, because it's not just UCF. There's other programs out there in the group of fives that play good football and consistently good football. And it's just they're not going to get the respect that they deserve. Now, if UCF beats Auburn, does that change that fact? Do all these group of five schools get taken seriously? Does the playoff expand to eight teams? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that it will, because I don't know that the powers that be want the story to change, because people are greedy and they want to keep the money, you know, in-house. It behooves them to have fewer teams at the top than it does to have equal and fair opportunity for everyone. So I don't know. That's my take. What's yours?
Yeah, I don't know that it changes anything, but I mean, you think about Boise State and how many times they had to shock somebody for things to finally start getting recognized, and even then, they probably did not get the respect they deserve. But right now, college football is such in the it's such in the conversation because of this committee, because of these playoffs, and I think the committee is paying attention, and maybe they will see this. I don't know. It's there are teams in Power Fives that don't get respect. Wisconsin has one loss, and they don't get the respect, and they were never even in a discussion. Ohio State last year lost to the champ and still got in because of their name. Alabama loses to Auburn in a must-win game for them. They still get in because of their name. I guarantee you, if that's Mississippi State that goes 11-1 and loses to Ole Miss in the last game and doesn't win the SEC, they're not in the playoff. So there's even Power Five schools that don't get the benefit of the doubt from this committee, and there's some that do. But along those same lines, as you said, the big FU, I think, is the main thing that you can do here, and you can argue all season long, and UCF hasn't. We've been the ones arguing, and it's been the fans that have been arguing it, but the players know, and they want to be able to say, hey, you guys had us wrong. You had us wrong when we were 15. You had us wrong at 14. You had us wrong at 12, and this is that chance to do it. And does it mean that next time a group of five team goes 12-0, 13-0, that they'll get more respect? Maybe not. But at least there's now a history or something they can look and say, well, you know, this has happened before, and maybe we whiffed on it, and maybe we need to give them a little more respect. I don't know that it ever changes who gets into the top four. But certainly to me, UCF has been fighting a respect battle all year, and they talk about the eye test. Well, watch a game. That's your eye test. You know, don't just look at the score and who they play. Watch one UCF game. You'll see the eye test, and you'll see they're as good as any of those teams above them on any given day, and they can compete with them. So this is that chance to prove it. And like I said, you can't bowl games are so hard to figure out because some teams are prepared, some teams aren't. It's a whole different dynamic than the week to week of the regular season. And then everything else that comes in with new coaches, and it seems everybody has a new coach somewhere.
Be it a
coordinator, be it a head coach. Everybody has changes from the time the season ends to when the bowl game begins and all those other distractions. So it's not a completely perfect representation of what these two teams are, but certainly this is the biggest game for UCF football, and the chance to go 13-0 with a win over Auburn in a New Year's Day 6 bowl with all the distraction.
I think they'll be ready. I just got to add this in here because you and I have touched on this on our previous podcast. You know, they've had distractions all season. So at this point, this is not even a question. Can they handle it? We already know the answer to that. I think they're going to be mentally ready. And I think this break is actually going to be the best thing that happened to them. Because number one, it gives them time to settle any hurt feelings and emotions that they have about what happened. Because we're talking about like a month break before, you know, they play Auburn. Number two, they needed the rest. Those guys didn't have a bye week for a long time. And I know some folks were asking about, you know, what happened to the defense in the last couple games of the season. And I think some of what happened was they were really banged up. There were guys playing through hip flexors and, you know, different little nagging injuries that, you know, the general public may not have known because they were tired. These guys were starting to get tired and broken down. So I think having the physical break, the mental break will be helpful. And I think these guys are so zoned in on having a chip on their shoulder and wanting to prove something to the world that I think the Scott Frost stuff and the coaching staff and the awkwardness of that, I think that ultimately becomes a very minor thing to them because I think they're ready to take care of business.
And I agree with you 100% on that. And that's why I was actually going to finish up this podcast with you and just, you know, what's next? What's going on? I know the players are off. We're coming up on exams. What happens over the next couple of weeks with UCF football? Hopefully you get a break. But just
negative.
It's been so whirlwind though, and just so much craziness. How do the next couple of weeks play out before they get back in there, get their pads back on, and start doing the preparations for the bowl game? But how does everybody navigate the next couple of weeks? What are we looking at or what are we watching for?
Well, it's going to be pretty quiet right now. I know, what's today? Today is Wednesday, Thursday. I don't know the days anymore because it all feels like one day. But when I was told Wednesday and Thursday, they're just going to do some running and lifting. You know, the kids have exams right now. And also, this is a heavy recruiting period for the coaches. So there's not going to be a lot happening right now other than taking care of school, taking care of academics, kind of resting, getting their bodies back into shape. I think next week is probably when they have to start figuring out the staff situation because there's a logistical thing you do have to ask here, you mm-hmm. know, where the coach is going to be because they're not recruiting for UCF right now. They're out recruiting for Nebraska. So are they traveling, you know, somewhere in the Midwest? Or are they staying here in Florida? Like they're kind of all over the place. I think they just kind of have to figure out what the logistics are, who's going to be on site. And I think that's a fluid thing because this is kind of a unique situation here. Especially because like last year when they played in a bowl game, it was a Cure Bowl and it was an early bowl game.
Right. Yeah. December it was like right 17th. Away.
Right. Now you've got a much longer break and you had the early signing period this year. Dead period, I think starts on December 17th. So they're pretty much recruiting up until that time period. And even for Frost, they're kind of, you know, I don't want to say behind, but, you know, he's a new coach there, too. So he's got to shore up things for Nebraska. You have the new UCF coaching staff out there recruiting for UCF. You know, who's sitting in the office? Is Heupel there? Is Frost there? You know, I think there's just a lot of logistical things. I mean, minor things, but logistical things that they're trying to work through. And I don't know what that looks like for next week. I know what this week looks like. And I think everything right now is fluid and kind of up in the air and they're figuring it out as they go.
Yeah, and I think the dead period starts December 18th.
So
right now everybody is going crazy recruiting. I mean, that's what Heupel's doing. That's what Randy Shannon's doing. That's what Scott Frost and his coaches are doing. Different places now, obviously. But yeah, they have to figure out those logistics for when those practices are and who's leading them and who's doing what. But you have a little bit of time to figure that out. like I said, hopefully you have a little bit of time to catch your breath. Fantastic work through all this by you, and it's crazy, and you've done a great job, and I'm just putting that out there, and I'm sure many others would say the same thing. And just catch your breath, and we'll catch up again as it starts to heat up, getting ready for the Peach Bowl.
All right, thanks, Brent.
And you listening, thank you for listening this far. And make sure that you subscribe to the podcast, share us with social media, and tell a friend. And follow everything UCF at OrlandoSentinel.com.
Thank you for listening to UCF Knights Talk, your podcast home for the latest on the UCF Knights. For more UCF coverage, visit OrlandoSentinel.com. Subscribe to this podcast, share it on social media, and review it on iTunes.